Committee for Telecommunications Regulation and Infrastructure Division is beginning for this morning. Welcome, everyone. I'd like to extend a special welcome to a new member we have here, Representative Junkie. Any words you want to say to the committee as to
introduce ourselves again?
I've been around a while.
Well, it's great to have you here, and thanks everyone for being here this morning. First order of business, Lieutenant Brown moves minutes from whatever is before us here, January 23rd. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Members, what we're going to do today is look at an overview of Connected Nations or Connected Minnesota's mapping project. And I just want to say a few words about how we got to this point, just kind of put it in context a little bit, particularly for the new members. Some folks that have been on the committee are a little bit more up to speed, so to speak, on the issue, and I especially want to thank Representative Junkie over here for providing the suggestion, the idea to move ahead with this as a bill and a project, and I think it was a great idea. So thank you, Representative Junkie. Last year, the governor signed a bill, Senate File 3337, that appropriated money from the Telephone Assistance Fund. And what the bill did was mandated the Department of Commerce to contract with a nonprofit organization, which ended up being Connected Minnesota, to work on some maps displaying levels of broadband service, connection speed, and type of technology throughout the state of Minnesota. And that's what they did. And today we're fortunate to have Brent Legg from Connected Nation, now also Connected Minnesota, with us, and he's going to walk through the results of the mapping that they've done, the study that they've completed. There's now a website, www.connectedminnesota.org, that you can go to, an interactive map that will provide some information that Mr. Lay is going to talk about. So with no further ado, I'm going to turn over to you, Mr. Legg, if you want to just identify yourself for the record so everyone knows who you are.
Certainly.
And proceed.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the invitation to present, and thank you for your hard work in getting us to where we are today. My name is Brent Legg. I'm the Vice President of State and Local Initiatives for Connected Nation. We're a national 501c3 nonprofit. I'll go into the background of our organization here in just a bit, but I want to introduce my colleagues. Sitting to my immediate right is Wes Kerr, who is our Senior GIS Manager at Connected Nation. And next to him is Chip Spann, our Senior Network Engineer and Wireless Business Analyst. I brought these guys with me because they're the technical experts. If you have any questions, they will certainly be able to answer them. Just quickly again about Connected Nation. Connected Nation is a national nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we facilitate market-based strategies for doing two things: to expand broadband availability, and to increase broadband adoption rates across the United States through public-private partnerships. Our mission statement says that we believe that states, communities, families, and individuals can realize great economic and social advantages when we accelerate broadband availability in unserved areas and increase broadband use in all areas, rural and urban alike. There are five key components to the Connected Nation model, and the first component is street-level broadband infrastructure mapping, which is what you have undertaken as part of the bill that passed last year. There are other components to the Connected Nation model that we have in place in three states, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Ohio. And fortunately, with the passage of S-1492 in the U.S. Congress last year, and with the money that is currently included in the President's stimulus bill that's being considered before Congress this very week, there's the potential for states to be able to access federal funds to fully launch a comprehensive initiative that includes all five of these components and supports mapping on an ongoing basis, not just until the end of this current contract that we have with the state, which expires on June 30th. So there's a great great potential for the state to engage in a much larger broadband expansion initiative in cooperation with the Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to work with the state to do just that. Connected Nation is currently working in a number of states. I mentioned Kentucky, Tennessee, and Ohio are three comprehensive state programs there. We have also produced broadband availability maps for the states of West Virginia and South Carolina. Minnesota is the sixth statewide broadband availability map that we've produced, and we're very proud of it. We believe that it is the most accurate map, the most comprehensive map that we've produced to date, and I'll go into some reasons why that is in just a few minutes. We're also getting ready to undertake mapping initiatives in the states of Colorado and North Carolina. We are awaiting RFP decisions to do this work in Texas, Kansas, and Illinois. So we are expanding our scope across the country, and we're very excited about the opportunities that the stimulus bill brings to doing this type of work around the nation. Just by way of background, and Representative Johnson has already covered a bit of this, as you know, the omnibus finance bill containing the language to undertake the mapping project, which was Senate File 3337, passed the legislature on May 7th of 2008 and was signed into law by Governor Pawlenty on May 12th of 2008. The Minnesota Department of Commerce was charged with issuing an RFP for qualifying vendors. Connect Minnesota, which is a 501c3 nonprofit subsidiary of Connected Nation, submitted a bid and was subsequently selected by the Minnesota Department of Commerce for the mapping work. Connected Nation brings, as I mentioned on the previous slide, years of experience to this Connect Minnesota mapping initiative. We have worked with broadband providers all over the country to produce maps in Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, West Virginia, and South Carolina, as I mentioned, and with the two states pending in North Carolina and Colorado, those maps will soon be available as well. Some key points on the results of our work. Provider participation was and remains voluntary in this data collection process, but we have had tremendous cooperation from providers in Minnesota. There are 98 broadband providers reflected on the map today, and it should be noted that these maps are in a preliminary state, and new information is being added daily. Our contract with the Department of Commerce asked us to release a preliminary set of maps by February 1st of 09, which we did, with a final set of maps to be completed by June 30th of this year. And this window between the preliminary release and the final release will allow us to do several things during these 4.5 months. We're going to continue the process of field personnel validating data. My colleague Chip Spann has spent an enormous amount of time on the ground in all corners of the state, working with providers from the largest to the smallest, gathering data. He's mainly focused on wireless, but he has helped West and the GIS division of our operation to secure data from a number of providers, and I'll talk about the different providers that are reflected on the map in just a bit. We're going to continue that process of validating the data. We're going to continue to seek input from the public, the provider community, and state leaders like yourself to identify any inaccuracies and suggest revisions to the map, and we are already receiving this feedback. There are forms available that you can go on our website, connectmn.org, connectmn.org. And if you notice an inaccuracy on the map, or you believe there might be an inaccuracy on the map, you can submit a form, or you can submit an inquiry, and we will handle those on a case-by-case basis. Our objective is to make sure that this map is as accurate as it possibly can be by the June 30th deadline. We're also going to continue gathering data from providers that currently aren't represented on the map. And again, we have had a tremendous response to this process. From the smallest providers all the way up to the large ones like Quest and Comcast, we've had a tremendous response from all of them. And they have provided us more granular data than we've ever been provided in any state before. And so they should be complimented for their willingness to do that and participate in good faith in this process. some of our key findings. We have received data from cable companies, municipalities, wireless internet service providers, rural co-ops, ILECs, and CLEX that operate a number of broadband platforms, including DSL, cable, fixed wireless, mobile, cellular wireless, and fiber service platforms. Approximately 92% of Minnesota households have access to broadband in one of those forms. The remaining 8% comprises about 151,000 households, or about 418,000 people, that do not have access. And we expect availability to increase by about another 2% as other providers are added to the map. But, of course, the consumer validation process could also negatively impact that level of household availability slightly. So it may end up being a wash as new providers are added. We don't know yet. But that's why we're in a preliminary process now leading up to the end of June and the final release of the maps, is that we'll have some time to add providers and also correct any inaccuracies that might exist. This is the platform neutral broadband availability map. It shows just simply where broadband is available and where it isn't. The lighter pink areas show where broadband is available by in multiple platforms. You see that the Twin Cities area is colored with the light pink color, which indicates there are a number of broadband providers here in the Twin Cities. Elsewhere in the state, the darker pink color represents, and I hope it's showing up accurately on the screen, looks to be, the darker pink area shows where broadband is available by just one type of provider. And then there's a light blue area, which is, there's a lot of this coverage in the northeast part of the state that shows or indicates mobile cellular wireless broadband coverage.
I think those are lakes.
there are a number of lakes, and if you're not looking closely at the map, the color differentiation between the lakes and the wireless coverage is sometimes difficult to pick out. But you're right, there are a number of lakes on the map. We've also added a layer to the map of state and federal lands. So there's a and that's indicated by a green stripe from bottom left to top right that shows where state and federal lands exist. So you can also, from that, gather that those areas are rather sparsely populated in most cases. We have found in other maps that we've produced that's helpful information to know. And we can also break down that map by provider platform. And the map that you see on the screen shows the different types of broadband from fiber, cable, DSL, wireless, which is fixed wireless service, and then mobile cellular wireless broadband, as well as the unserved area. And these maps are available in an interactive format, which you can visit on our website at connectmn.org. You can view the broadband service inventory interactive map on the website, which is address searchable. So you can actually type in your street address, zoom in to your street, and determine who provides broadband service at your address, if any providers. This is a very useful tool for consumer validation. We will receive a lot of our consumer inquiries based on the ability to zoom in at the street level and respond if there are areas on the map that are showing broadband availability, but there's actually no broadband service available. We anticipate that number will be rather low, but we want to provide that opportunity for people to provide us with feedback so we can make modifications as they're required. You can also add and remove layers. There's an area on the left-hand side there where you can add and remove roads and other information from the map. If you do visit this site, I encourage you to read the instructions on how to map your address. There's a visual explanation on there that shows you how to identify your service providers and how to manipulate the tool most effectively. We've also produced a series of speed maps for the state. And I'll get into the technicalities of how we process that information in a bit. There were some concerns raised last week in the blogosphere that have helped us improve our speed testing process, and I'll go into that in just a second. But the average download speed statewide is higher than we've seen in any other state, at approximately 6.5 megs down. The average upload speed is approximately 1.5 megs up. Speed data was obtained from Ookla NetMetrics testing servers in the Twin Cities, Grand Forks, North Dakota, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which are the closest testing servers that Ookla employs on its number of testing sites. Users perform these tests on such sites as speedtest.net, and if any of you have ever tested your own internet connection speed on speedtest.net, you have the option of choosing which server you want to bounce your test off of. But the data that we used in producing these speed maps come from those three servers that I mentioned in the Twin Cities, in Grand Forks, and in Sioux Falls. The sample size was comprised of approximately 200,000 tests on those three servers performed between November 2008 and today, or actually last week. Connect Minnesota's own speed testing tool, which is located at connectmn.org, has performed approximately 2,000 tests to date, and we use the same Ookla technology that was employed to create the map. But those tests, those 2,000 tests, were excluded from the data that we used to produce the speed maps because of some concerns that were raised last week. The concerns were about the testing server's physical location, which was in Dallas, Texas, and its limited throughput capacity. It's a good thing, actually, that we had to make this modification, because in other states we have not experienced the bandwidth that is available in this state, especially here in the Twin Cities. Tests that were being run over Comcast 50 meg service, for instance, were showing up low. And the reason for that was that our speed test tool was built originally to test up to 10 meg connections, because 10 meg connections was the maximum that anyone had. So we had to make some modifications. And so, fortunately, we were able to relocate our server within the last week to Chicago, which is the nearest dedicated server location we could supply. And we added the ability to measure a symmetrical 100 meg connection each way. So that way, there should be no throughput capacity issues with the testing process. And I've received some feedback from people who have Comcast service, and they're saying that the returns are what they should be now, which is good. So on an ongoing basis, we're going to be collecting our speed test data using this tool. We're encouraging people to visit the ConnectMN website and test their home broadband connection. And those results will be used to populate the speed maps that are released at the end of our contract by June 30th. This is an example of the speed map that we produced using the speedtest.net data. You can see there that there are different colors that indicate the different tiers of speed. Most of the state has achieved at least basic Tier 1 broadband service, which begins at 768K, according to the FCC. And it moves all the way up to an average, very high speed of Tier 7, Tier 6, and Tier 7 in the Twin Cities area. So you can see that the speed in the Twin Cities area is quite different than it is in some of the other states. But other areas of the state aren't doing too badly either, but some are. We also produced an upload speed map, which shows the average residential upload speed. And you can see that the speed is rather high in the Twin Cities area, but it certainly falls off as you go out into the rural areas of the state. And that really brings us to the end of our presentation, but I want to take some time to answer any questions that you have about this process. And we can also do a demonstration of the interactive map, if you like, or of the speed test, if you'd like, and show you how that works. But we would love to entertain any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Bay. We will entertain some questions at this time, and then we would like to see a demonstration of how the service actually works. So,
sure.
Any representative have any questions right now? Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, I have some technical questions that maybe Mr. Legg could help us out. Sure. I'm assuming when I look at this map, Mr. Legg, that it's not listed on here, it's just regular old dial-up service. I think everybody in the state must have that. Is that a given?
That's correct.
Follow-up on that, Mr. Chair, is could you define for us the difference between fixed wireless and mobile wireless? Do you differentiate on the map? And
certainly. Well, I will defer that, Mr. Chairman, to our wireless business analyst and network engineer, Chip Fan, who's an expert in the field.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with the
Thank you, Mr.
question.
Chair. My name is Chip Spann. I'm the Senior Engineer and Wireless Business Analyst for Connected Nation. The difference in the two services, for instance, if you have an iPhone or you're using a 3G device like a BlackBerry, mm-hmm. you're typically receiving your service on a mobile frequency, which was allocated perhaps 700 megahertz, 1.9 gigahertz. When we talk about fixed wireless, we're referring to either licensed or unlicensed wireless ISPs who are transmitting a signal from a fixed tower location out to a fixed geographic service area. Minnesota Valley Television Improvement Corporation is a good example of that. They have about 10,000 square miles of coverage in the lower section of the state. They're transmitting off of about 45 towers, and they provide fixed wireless internet service to about 1,500 customers in the area. Clearwire is one of those type of companies that can now offer both because of the recent rule adoptions that allow for a WiMAX platform using the frequencies on the broadband radio service and educational broadband service. They have the ability to use a low power fixed, a mid power fixed, and a upper band mobile, so that you can take a stationary device like your laptop, plug it in, and if you get signal, you can actually be driving down the highway and it works. You can take your modem from your house to your business, and that's something that is not offered by AT&T or Comcast. You know, the ability to literally have an untethered portable modem. So there's some unique nuances, but this state has been far more sophisticated than most we've met.
We don't recommend using your laptop.
Although not specifically illegal.
What was I thinking?
Let's let some other folks ask, but I have some more technical questions.
Happy?
Have to be covered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick question. You mentioned WiMAX, and I was thinking of WiMAX and some other things. How do you see in the next year or 5 years or 10 years new technologies impacting what this map is going to look like?
Okay.
You want to start first?
Certainly. Go ahead and identify yourself first.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Wes Carter. I am the Senior GIS Manager for Connected Nation. Looking at the map today, we've had an overwhelming response in the time that we've been working with the providers in the state. And really, as we've noted several times, the providers in the state are moving more rapidly than we have seen in other locations onto new technologies. There were some discussions as to, you know, the continued build out of fiber networks. And I believe from the response that I've had from the providers in the state that they're going to continue to move that direction. And then along each of the different platforms, you'll find that there is innovation happening and changes to those technologies that allow them to each build out and improve the service levels, the service speeds, if you will, that they're able to produce. As Chip was mentioning, the WiMAX, obviously there are some rather remote areas of this state that are going to be difficult for landline-based services to reach out to. And so, you know, in the coming years, I believe you will see a higher development of the services that Chip has already discussed, but then also, you know, some of the new and more innovative technologies that are coming to the market at this point.
Representative Mason?
Okay, Mr. Chair, Mr. Link, is there a layer of the map that shows business availability and business speeds?
There isn't, and that wasn't part of the scope of our project, but I should say the caveat in that is that there are really two different types of business connections. There are connections that very large companies use to access broadband, which are and essentially large businesses can purchase whatever they would like in order to achieve the speed that they need. But a lot of small businesses around the state access broadband in much the same way that consumers access broadband over a cable modem or DSL modem, or they may have a T1 or a T3 line even. This map does reflect business service on the cable and DSL side. So if we have and on the fiber side too, if a service provider is providing fiber service, But the focus of the product was on residential service or consumer grade service across the state. And so we contacted broadband providers, from Comcast and Quest on down to the local telcos, wireless internet service providers, et cetera, to receive that data.
Brooklyn Deputy?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lake, you had mentioned that there's a different speed download versus uploading. Could you explain to us why?
Well, historically, and I don't want to get over my head on the answer to this question, so I made the first of my counterparts here. But that's what's known as an asymmetrical connection, where the download speed is much faster, typically, than the upload speed. We're starting to see, as new technologies are rolled out, that symmetrical connections, the same upload speed to download speed, the ratio is the same. As new technologies are being rolled out, fiber is making that possible. New technologies are being rolled out all the time that are increasing the ability of users to upload as fast as they download. But I would probably want to ask my colleagues if they have any other comments on that.
Mr. Chairman. Go ahead, Mr. Stan.
The short answer is that in the early days of consumer use on the Internet, we were taking more things than we were giving back. You were constantly going to web pages and downloading. If you think about the return path or the upstream, historically it has been limited to text messaging on responding to email. As we have started using it to send pictures and streaming movies and videos, there has been a necessity for service providers to start looking at more symmetrical pipes. So it's not uncommon in almost all states to have service levels where you have a high download speed and a limited upload speed.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very interesting presentation. It's really encouraging, Mr. Legg, to see tangibly in front of us, some of the anecdotal things you hear. And so it's really good to see that, and really have to say good to hear good things about Minnesota and our providers. I mean, this has really been a private market, been very active, and we're really pleased to hear that. Probably one of the things that, again, we're here to kind of talk about the future and where it's going, and there's 118,000 people thereabouts in your preliminaries that do not yet have access. But when I hear some of these YMAX or some of the other future, when they're doing such a good job and they're already going that way so well, what do some of those things mean to us in the relatively near future as far as service to those who don't yet have it or those who do have it?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. In terms of how the wireless business is changing, and the wireless business is changing, with the advent of the iPhone and the BlackBerry, mobile devices are becoming much more common. But that fixed wireless is also becoming a significant option for those people who live in remote rural areas that don't have access to broadband right now. And Chip is seeing innovations in that market all the time. And so I'd again like to defer to him to answer that question about future changes.
Mr. Stan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and encapsulate as many bullet points for you as I can. There have been some things that have changed recently. For instance, the Federal Communications Commission has issued out additional unlicensed spectrum in the 3650 to 3700 megahertz band. That's combined with the ability for wireless providers to use the 900 megahertz, the 2.4 gigahertz. There are several dots in the 5 gigahertz band, and now we have the 3650 band. That provides small operators the ability to go out and use very robust spectrum without having to go through FCC-regulated auctions. When you're talking about the auction spectrum, we go back historically to MDS and AWS and WCS, the types of spectrum that are held today by Clearwire and Sprint, AT&T, and others. The advent of WiMAX has helped dramatically. There's another technology coming out on the horizon called LTE, or Long-Term Evolution, which I think is going to be a very robust platform. But WiMAX does some things a little bit different than we've been accustomed to, because it's a relatively smart technology. It either makes your speed faster or it allows your signal to travel farther. To give you an example of what WiMAX
mobile platforms have the ability to do. I went through a demonstration in Washington, D.C. a couple of months ago and had a laptop sitting on my lap in the back of a taxi cab. And while we were driving through Washington, D.C. at 40 miles an hour, I was able to download live videos from Jumpbox, download music from Kazaa and Morpheus, have a GPS session going on so I could track where I was going in Washington, D.C. I was making a voice over IP call. I was sending email. And with all of that going on, I was still able to do download speed test at 5 megabits per second.
But you weren't driving.
No, ma'am, I wasn't driving. I was too enthralled. And we have operators in the state today that are using these licensed frequencies, like Minnesota Valley Television Improvement Corporation. There has been a nationwide FCC-mandated spectrum transition going on in certain bands, which is now coming to completion. And operators like MWTV and Clearwire, who have strong market positions in the state, are starting to roll out these WiMAX platforms. So you've got a very nice balance of the small guy with the unlicensed abilities to go out in the rural markets and the larger, more deep-pocketed providers going out and starting to offer innovative technology.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nathan?
My question is similar to my first one. Do you have a layer that shows the fiber that's connected to schools, cities, counties, colleges, et cetera?
Right. Again, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, there, that was, again, not part of the scope of the project or what we were asked to do. That is certainly something that we could do on into the future if we were asked to do so. Again, the focus was on residential connections. There are some service providers that are providing fiber, especially on the western side of the state, they're likely providing that service to entities beyond residential, but we don't differentiate between those types of connections. We just map the service that was available.
Thank you.
And Representative Junkie?
Thanks. You said you had 98, I think, providers participating. How many do you estimate have not participated?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, and it's good to see you again. I testified in front of your committee the first time I made this trip up here about a year and a half ago, and it's good to see you again. We're estimating that there are about 150 providers in the state. It's hard to know the exact number because some of the identified providers are holding companies for a number of providers with different names, and so it's been, and this is difficult when we're talking about the smaller providers, the local ones, and so we've had to go through a very arduous process of trying to identify which company is a holding company for several other providers. In some cases where we thought we had missed a provider or did not have that provider's data, they actually had provided their data as part of their holding company submission to us. So there are several there are several reasons why it's hard to estimate the total number of broadband providers in the state. I would like to defer to my colleague Wes Kerr, who has handled the interactions with these providers, to kind of give you possibly maybe even a better explanation of that than I can.
And Mr. Chair, as he's getting ready to answer, not only, so we have about two-thirds at this point, which again, we should layer the other third of them over here. What can you or we do over the next 4 or 5 months to assure that the majority of those we find and are able to convince to participate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Duffy, I think we're going to see an influx of provider participation as a result of this map being public. I think that's one of the advantages of producing a preliminary map where there are gaps and some providers are not represented. The state is going to be using this map to help make decisions about where coverage gaps exist. There are funds in the economic stimulus bill that the President is proposing for broadband infrastructure build-out. Those decisions on covering those unserved areas are going to be impacted by the coverage gaps that are represented on this map. So there's certainly an incentive for providers to participate. Again, we anticipate that the level of household availability is only going to change by about 2%, possibly 3%, once more providers are added, the other third of providers. But I think certainly there's an incentive for providers not to be left out of this process. And in terms of what you as a committee can do, if you notice an area of the state that is reflecting a coverage gap and you know of a provider in that area, it would certainly not hurt for you to have a conversation with that provider and ask them if they've had a conversation with us, and if there's anything that we can do to help facilitate receiving their data. We have had a great relationship with all the providers we work with so far in the state, and from the big ones like Comcast and Quest all the way down. And we want to work through, if there are legal issues or legal questions that we need to answer, we'll work through that process with them to get them on the map. I would just encourage you to, if you see an area on the map that is unserved and you know of a provider that's providing service there in that area, have a conversation with them and point them in our direction. We'd love to have that conversation with them again.
And Mr. Chair, finally, again, I think this is, as we knew as a committee, a great tool for a starting point. And, we were seeing a plethora of bills introduced the last few years to dictate speeds or service or other things without really having this background. And I think this background is going to be important. I hope we figure out through federal monies or through our own access monies in our state system here how to continue to keep this an ongoing project over the next number of years, at least on the mapping, because I think we've already heard today some interfacing that can be done, whether it's a business or public access, public building access. I'd also like to see a cost and pricing interface across here on speed versus what it costs you from the metro out to the corners of the state, because I think that would be rather interesting and probably help us with some of our policy decisions here. So I think there's a lot to do yet. This is fantastic from where we started, and looking forward to maybe hearing from our providers too in the future on what they'd like to see incorporated in these maps and overlays as we move forward too.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and testifiers, thanks for coming today. It's a great presentation. Just wondering if you could play futurist for a second. It just seems to me like stuff like this is the way to go. I mean, you're talking about fiber and WiMAX and just the experience you talked about being in the car. You could be out on one of our lakes fishing and have a computer fully hooked up and going. That just seems like the future to me, more so than having, you know, fiber or the WiMAX or whatever you're talking. Can you play futurist for a second?
Well, I
feel like,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I kind of did, but just kind of keep it
right. Well, Representative Loyley, I'm always trying to find a way to get rid of my BlackBerry and iPhone, so it seems to follow me everywhere I go. I think the world is certainly changing, and the need for speed is changing. I gave a presentation in New Orleans a couple of months ago about how the growth of information traversing the internet is growing on an exponential rate. YouTube has contributed to that a great deal. YouTube today uses more bandwidth itself than the entire internet did in 2004. That's a tremendous growth. And I'd love to share the entire presentation that I have with you sometime. That's only going to continue, and so the need for technology to be able to handle that bandwidth is going to need to continue. And we're seeing high definition movies are and other large format files are becoming the norm now. And so connections, including mobile connections, are adapting to that process. The iPhone operates on 3G network today. You know, 4G is in development, and so which includes faster speeds and better connectivity for people. So I think wireless connections are getting faster. Landline connections are getting faster. We see that Comcast has deployed its 50 meg service here in the Twin Cities, the first area in the country to deploy that at a consumer level. So companies understand that the need for speed is only going to be increasing, and if they want to remain relevant in the marketplace, they're going to have to increase their service. Other comments related to that, I'd like to defer again to Chip Spann, Mr. Chairman, if I can.
Mr. Spann?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, if you think back a mere 10 years ago where we were, I can remember that the first cell phone I had was about analogous to the kind we cut, you know, many folks touted around in the military. The first internet connection that I had was through a company called Prodigy, and it took about 15 minutes just to make the initial connection. And, you know, if you were patient enough, you might actually get a conversation of two or three sentences out during the day. But if every time consumers start having new ideas, it's driving the companies like Comcast and Quest and others to develop the mechanism to support that. I think, you know, ideally at some point I'd probably have a microphone and a speaker just embedded into my hand. It would be a lot easier. Today's devices that we're using are great because you have almost the availability to carry a complete computer system around with you. And I think that's the only shortfall. That's the only reason we're not more advanced in the U.S. as we are today, is because I don't have access to Microsoft Word or spreadsheets or anything else on here. The screen is too small and the keyboard is a little cumbersome. But when we get to the point where we can figure out a way to make...
iPhone, sir.
Yeah, well, I've got one of those, too.
Yeah. Yeah, get them in Wilmer.
Yeah. But even with that, you know, there's still a number of consumers in the United States that are getting their first computer. And they're just starting to learn how to use it. So we've got a class of people who are exceptionally sophisticated and a class that we're still trying to bring into this century. And that's part of what this mapping process helps with. Ultimately, when we're in states like Tennessee or Kentucky or Ohio and we're going through the full five-step process, we start seeing what's causing the adoption rates to work or not. We oftentimes find out that the affordability of a computer has been the primary barrier to getting adoption out in the rural marketplaces. Age may have something to do with it. Today's senior citizens are still a little concerned and afraid to get out on a computer and learn how to do this. So I think the technology in part is going to be continuously driven by the providers who have the foresight to start offering the 20 meg and 50 meg and 100 meg services that enable the products like YouTube that attract the people like you and I to continuously gravitate both towards the fixed internet as well as the mobile internet platform.
That's very true. And just to follow up on Chip's comments, you know, there are barriers to broadband adoption that exist. And part of what we do in Kentucky and Tennessee and Ohio is to identify those barriers. Is computer ownership a barrier to broadband adoption? Is age or is there an education or literacy issue that needs to be addressed in a certain geographic area that would inspire more people to adopt broadband? Is there a cost factor? If there is a certain price point that could be met in a community that would encourage people to adopt broadband, when they do a cost benefit analysis, you know, the lower price would help them and help encourage them to adopt. And that type of information about barriers to broadband adoption, we believe, is needed in every state. We'd like to be able to do that. And I think if the funding remains in the stimulus bill to fund the S-1492 grant program to launch initiatives like ours, that's something that we could do here and inform those decisions here. So,
Paul, Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for the testimony. As you're traveling around, you say you've done mapping for six states, and you're, you know, obviously looking all over. Is there any examples that you're aware of where municipalities and others, you know, in Minnesota we have Winona and St. Peter maybe, or Monticello that have tried to do some of the stuff on their own citywide, or is there any around the country that have been successful that you're aware of or that are working? I mean, it seems like some of the premise on doing that is that they offer up a cheaper system, maybe. That's debatable, of course, but to the whole city. And I think a lot of that's on fiber and other things. But
sure. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to defer to Chip to answer that question. He is he's our resident expert on that subject.
Go ahead, Mr. Stan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we occasionally will run into a municipal that wants to expand from the conventional to the unconventional. In the city of Williamstown, Kentucky, which is a good example, that municipality had a cable television service and also offered electric, I believe, on a limited basis. They started receiving a lot of consumer requests from outside of their service territory in the county. And they wanted to figure out how to do that, but they knew that they couldn't continue to run fiber everywhere, and that it wasn't cost effective to continue trying to modify their cable plant. So they came to us and asked if there were other options, and we sat down and worked out an engineering design for that municipality and showed them how they could use fixed wireless service to start providing internet coverage outside of their municipal area. So now they're a muni in their Public Service Commission regulated area, and they're the only ubiquitous provider throughout the entire county. And that's just one example of the types of municipalities that we run across that are willing to think outside of the box.
That's right. It seems that municipal providers are most successful when they're serving an unserved area. And that's the example of Williamstown, where they were providing cable service inside the city limits, but they were receiving these requests from out in the county to provide service to unserved areas. And they've been able to support and sustain their service because they're the only player in the rural parts of the county. So they're not competing with anyone there. They are competing with Cincinnati Bell telephone DSL service inside the city limits, but that's not available outside. So it supported their wireless network.
Do you have one more question, Representative Lilly?
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How about scenarios in which there's serious competition, where you have quality products, maybe Quest or Comcast, and do any of those work that you're aware of, where the muni would do?
Mr. Spann?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
To comment? I think the only barrier with municipals competing against the larger companies is desire. Many times with municipals that I've worked with across the United States, they think they want to put their toe in the water, but they're kind of afraid to make that first step. There are several municipalities across the United States who have gone to rural utility services and filed grant applications or loan applications to start providing fiber to the node or fiber to the curb or fiber to the home. In places where that's being deployed, it has made, and I hate to go back to Kentucky, but that's one where I spend a lot of time, the city of Barberville, Kentucky, was ranked as one of the 6 most wired cities in the United States, thanks largely in part to the municipality there. So I think it takes the desire on the part of the municipal government, and it takes a lot of interaction with your constituents and with the consumers out there to just find out what is it that you want and what is it that we can provide to you, and then start looking at the most cost-effective way. Now, that's not to say that the alternative path shouldn't be to go to your local provider as well, like Comcast or Quest or others, and say, what can you do to make our community better, and how can we as a municipality help you with that? Sometimes the ability for them to expand is being constrained by regulation. And sometimes relaxing some of that regulation offers them the ability to do the things that you're looking to accomplish.
That's right. And Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, when municipalities get into providing broadband service, they're making a decision to compete in the marketplace with the public sector. And a lot of municipalities have had difficulty competing effectively and sustaining the ability to maintain that service because they're competing with an entity that is naturally set up to be a for-profit entity and to compete in the marketplace. And so we have seen examples of of where investments have been made to directly compete with the private sector to provide broadband service, and the city has not been able to recoup the funds that they've invested. So it is problematic if a business model can't be created to be able to effectively compete. And that's the ultimate decision that the city needs to be able to make is, okay, if we're going to use taxpayer dollars or either from the local municipality or from the state or from a federal grant to provide the service, are we going to be able to not just deploy the technology but be able to maintain and sustain and make repairs and, you know, et cetera, on this technology to be able to provide the same level of service that the for-profit company is making. So it's a decision that each municipality has to make, and it's a decision that is impacted by the political will of the people in that community. Are the people in that community willing to provide that support, the tax revenue support, and otherwise, to encourage a municipality to get into the business of competing with a for-profit firm? We found that typically, or I've seen in some cases anyway, that the political will is not there to support that, especially if people are satisfied with the service they're getting from a for-profit company. So it just varies from place to place, and it's hard to make a blanket statement that is applicable in every situation. We've seen Williamstown be very successful because they've gone into unserved areas, and they've been able to support their products by reaching those unserved areas. But it gets a little more tricky when you're competing with companies in the marketplace that are very much used to competing in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Mr. Light. We're going to take one more question from Representative Salernan. If we could move forward with your demonstration of how to use this particular inventory, that'd be fantastic. So, Representative Saylor?
Yes, certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lake, several of my questions have already been answered, but I just have one remaining, and that is, maybe you'll answer this in the next step here, but when we are able to go down into the data and look at the other layers, will there be a section showing kind of those end-of-the-road pieces that you can't show on a big map like this, you know, when we're able to zero in? Will we be able to see all those little areas that don't have service within it?
That's correct.
Mr. Lake?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, it should be able to, and I'll ask my colleague Wes to give this demonstration in just a minute, and perhaps maybe there's a street address that you can provide, Representative Saylor, that we can zoom into and take a look, and hopefully the map will be accurate. And if it's not, that's why we've set up a mechanism to receive that feedback via the website so we can make it as accurate as possible. The goal in this mapping process was to create a granular map that was accurate down to the street level, and we want to get the map to that point if it's not there yet. So we can, if you have a suggestion for an address that we could search, we'd be glad to do that.
Very, very well.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I ask one quick question?
Is that Mr. Happy?
Sorry. And thank you, Mr. Chair. When you guys were talking about in the presentation the 92% of Minnesota households that have access to broadband, that minimum tier one for that 92%?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, if you want to move forward with your demonstration, and members, we have till 10 o'clock. There'll probably be a few moments left for questions after demonstration. We'll certainly pick those up at that time, but go ahead with your demonstration.
So this is the Connect Minnesota website. This is connectmn.org, and it set up the different inquiry forms that I mentioned during my presentation are located on the right. We ask for people to submit stories about how broadband has changed their life. Ask people to tell us if they don't have broadband service, but they want it. We aggregate that data and provide it to the providers so that they can make, they can see that there's a demand for extending service into unserved areas. And we also allow people to tell us about their current broadband service. The maps are located under the mapping tab, so you click there, and you can download each of the copies of the maps. We have them in both PDF and JPEG format, the broadband inventory map, the platform map that breaks it down by the different platforms, the two speed maps, and then at the bottom there's a link to the interactive map. Also, there's a link here on the right-hand side, I want to test my access speed. So if you click that, the speed test comes up, and I will use, you can pick home or work, and I will pick and here I'm going to be submitting bad data into our site, but I'll use our hotel address.
You can use my address if you want.
Yeah, please. Let's do that.
You guys in the audience don't listen.
935.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
945.
935, sorry.
No, 935.
Weston, Weston, Ridge Parkway. In Chaska, 55318.
Okay, can you spell the city name for me?
Chaska.
Okay, and the zip is?
55318.
Okay, and what county do you live in?
Carver.
I'm sorry?
Carver, C-A-R-V-E-R.
Okay. Now, this is the caveat here. This is not testing his home address. This is testing the speed that's available here in the legislative committee room. Click the begin test button, and so we're running at about 15 megs down. The download speed is almost 16 megs. And about 6 megs up. That's quite good here in the committee room. And so this information is displayed for you down below. The latency is also very short, 19 milliseconds. So it's quite fast here. And so you'll be able to run this test from your home connection and measure that up against what you think you should be receiving. And the data that's obtained through the speed test is aggregated over the course of a period of time. And we use that information and the zip code information and county information that you provide to populate the speed map.
Mr. Chair? I'm happy. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when you do that, does it specify which provider or what service is providing that speed?
Yes, we have access to that information. And in fact, our mapping department will examine the data for outliers. So if we're getting a residential connection that's showing 500 megs, you know, down, we're going to exclude that from the data that we use to produce the map, because it's obviously a business connection of some type. We're also able to identify by IP address, because these tests keep track of the IP address that the test is coming from. We're able to identify what broadband provider is providing that service, and so we're able to aggregate that as well.
That's Sam Hoppy. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Legg, so if I go to this website and I look this up, or anybody at the table does, I mean, but if I look at this for my address, does that tell me if it's Chaska.net or Comcast or Embark DSL or another wireless provider?
It wouldn't tell. Mr. Chairman and Representative, it would not tell you, but it would, that information would be included in the data that we obtain, correct?
Okay.
And you want to test the interactive map site? I will turn it over. I'll back up here and load the map again. It's under the mapping tab. So you go to the main web page, click on the mapping tab, and scroll down to the bottom. And launch the interactive map. And I will turn it over to my colleague, Wes Kerr, to give the demonstration.
All right, Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chairman, I believe for the sake of our time, I will try to I'll try to demonstrate it as well as I can. Know that you could spend lots of time on here taking, looking at this thing very detailed. And so what I will try to do is try to display here, maybe here in the Twin Cities, kind of the information that can be retrieved from the system, and we'll go through that as quickly as possible. There's obviously several tools here on the interactive site itself, having the ability to add and take off the layers. Obviously, the speed information is here. You can layer roads and things. Obviously, as was pointed out earlier, it's sometimes difficult looking at that static map to understand what you see or what you're looking at. And so if you can take the roads off and you can take some of that information off, then you have a better view of what that coverage might look like in a particular area. So all those, those capabilities exist here for you to be able to do so. You can locate an address by clicking on this location. And as Brent had mentioned earlier,
You know, we strongly encourage you to read through some of the kind of the tutorial on how to utilize the tool itself, so that you're comfortable with the different tools and how each one of them has to interact with one another. And we will be continuing to update and make some of the tools easier to use as we move forward. But for the sake of, again, for the sake of time, we'll take a look here at the Twin Cities area. Let the data to load. Try to zoom in here in St. Paul. And I apologize. Sometimes it takes it a few moments to load because of just the sheer amount of data that exists. Let's see. I'm going to pick no place here in particular. However, recognize that, you know, if we had that address, if we've got an address, you can zoom directly to an address and then zoom, the kind of the process that happens there is to zoom directly in on an address, then tighten up around it, then to identify the provider types or the providers that are available in that particular area. Within this particular area, it shows that we've got AT&T, Verizon, Quest, and Comcast services available. If you click on those individual groups, then we can... If you notice there, then it provides you a link out to that provider's website. So for a consumer looking for service provider, you know, I'm looking for a service provider. How can I get information about that service provider? Then they have that direct opportunity from the site to then go out to the provider and to verify their address or verify the service availability and sign up from their that provider's website. Again. Yeah, and Chip brought up, you know, we'll take a look at an area of the state, you know, a particular area of the state that may not have service. Up here in the northwestern corner up here. We'll take a look here. Thus far, we haven't, you know, have not had received any data for this particular area, obviously. Again, I apologize for the latency and loading there. This is someone's home. I apologize for picking you out. And as you'll notice, here in this corner, it shows that there's no broadband provider located in that area. So obviously there's a lot of functionality here. You have the ability, again, to utilize an address, the address search to zoom to those locations. And just for, again, the sake of timing here, to not cause us to run over today, I haven't done that. But you have the ability, obviously, to type in the address, search for that address, and then identify the providers or the lack of provider in that particular location.
Very good. Representative Kipmeyer?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. When I'm looking at that map, is that, you know, I'm used to kind of like Google things where it's live maps. Are these fixed or live?
The data here is a fixed set of data, so it's not. The interactive broadband layers, we are constantly updating. So as providers, and even this week, as providers have been able to provide us updated information, we have updated that. And so the interactive site, we try to maintain as up-to-date as possible. And I say a daily, but as close to daily as we can, as that data comes in and as our staff is able to process and receive the approval of that service from the providers. The other layers here are static. They don't change unless there's an update to that data.
Very good. So the interactive map, Mr. Curry, you might want to check. You checked in February, you want to check again in May just to see if there's any further information.
Yes, sir. And again, it is a it's a matter of a constant change. We're continually getting data. As we get feedback from consumers, the public, leadership,
about where services are or do exist or do not exist, we will be updating those pieces on this interactive map at that point.
Representative Brown?
This is too fun. I've got to have you type in my address. and I'm telling you that if I would try this for my house, you're apologizing for the amount of time it takes here, I could go to the kids and bake a loaf of bread and come back, and it still wouldn't be on my computer. So I can do that. So 27667 Mower Freeborn Road.
Here, I have to spell it.
M-O-W-E-R hyphen Freeborn.
Can you spell born?
What's that?
Can you spell Freeborn?
Mm-hmm. F-R-E-E-B-O-R-N. Okay. Austin.
And it's road?
Yes.
Austin?
Mm-hmm.
And we need your zip code.
55912.
And the zip code, I believe, is required on these searches. So if you leave out a field, it's not going to come up with the results. So you do need to put in your zip code. Okay. It located your address here along the right-hand side. You'll click the little plus sign here and click this check mark, and it's going to zoom into your... you have to right-click on it. Okay. And then zoom to.
Mm-hmm.
Close the little address box here. And I'll turn it back over to Wes from here.
Again, because of the need to be at a very precise location, obviously you notice there's this pin pack here showing services. Typically you will want to go ahead and zoom in even tighter to that location. Does that look like where your home would be? Okay, that's good.
We get nervous.
Well, and let me explain that because of all the road data, we always run into a situation where a data set has, you know, an alternative name, a county road number, you know, those types of things. And so we end up with issues there because of that. It shows that we have not collected any data at that location, so I could obviously... identify here.
Mm-hmm. And you would do that by clicking on the little eye.
Yes. And
it's
going to show that all we have there is a local road.
So. You don't have much snow.
Yeah.
I believe that data was collected, you know, in the middle of the summer, maybe.
Good thing this isn't a snow picture. Just be. I can see if the horses are out.
Ma'am, is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, just real quick, too, I wanted to bring your attention to the instructions on how to use the tool. If you click on, I'll do it again. Okay. There are a series of links here at the top of the map to map your address. You can click on it. It provides an instructional tool on how to map your address and take the steps that I just went through to map the representative's home address. You can also, there's also an instructional tool on how to identify your broadband providers, which we've also identified, but just in case you get confused or have difficulty figuring out how to use the tool, there are some visual tutorials that will help you through that process here.
Very good. Well, this kind of information might suggest legislators send out to their constituents so they can get on this public website and see what's going on, get used to it.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, and we encourage more people to test their connection speed because we're collecting data from those speed tests. It's going to help us in the production of the speed maps as we approach our June 30th final map release. So the more tests we get, the more the merrier. And that's we need to encourage people to visit that testing site and test their connections.
Very good. We're kind of winding down here, I think, but there might be a question or two. Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And for Mr. Legge or whoever wants to answer, I'm looking at the inventory map that you gave us here. And your first area that you've identified is fiber broadband service. All over western and northwestern Minnesota, you get several areas that indicated. That's those are pretty sparsely populated areas. Can you tell us about what you're defining that fiber? I'm assuming it's fiber optic stuff. is that going right to farmsteads, or is it just what's in the right of way, or how does that work? What are you telling us here,
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chairman, the information that we've collected from the providers, we've discussed in great length the services that are available in these areas, and the data that was provided was that in those particular areas, and I have to say that the providers in the state have surprised me in a lot of areas, because some of the rural co-ops have built out networks that I certainly did not expect to see. Mm. And so the data collected, yes, is that there's fiber available to those homesteads in those areas in the state.
Mr. Chairman, actually to the homesteads then. So it's running down the road and
was our understanding.
Okay.
And it's certainly something that we can, follow up with.
It's impressive, it's astonishing, and knowing some of the experience, Mr. Chair, from discussion I think we had last year about the city of Windham building fiber to every home and how that was working.
Or not.
Yeah, how expensive it was. I guess it was hugely expensive. I'm looking at population densities way under what Windham's experiencing here, and I'm wondering about that, what's available, where it's actually at, and whether people are actually pulling it down the driveway to their farmhouse. It'd be good if you could follow up on that. Did you say that they're coming back in May? Did I hear that?
We haven't been invited yet, but we certainly could.
We'd like to hear about that down the road a little bit when we sieve this out a little more and bring the quality up just a little more. That'd be great.
Mr. Chairman.
Very good.
Mr. Kerr. Certainly, and this is certainly the kind of discussion and conversation that we are now, we certainly want to entertain, and so, moving forward in the next few months, we want to ensure that we are correctly identifying the services that are available, that we understand exactly what that looks like, and so as we are moving forward, those are the kinds of questions that allow us to work with providers to ensure the accuracy of the map.
Thank you.
That was exactly my question. I think an update later on would be very valuable, especially in this situation that they're doing. It's just a preliminary. I'd really like to see closer to the final, and when we have more providers being involved, I'm sure this will help get those providers involved by just raising this committee's attention to it. So that's great to hear. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be glad to come back in June. It'll be a lot warmer here.
Maybe. As we wind down then, Mr. Legge and colleagues, any concluding comments you wish to make about where the project's at or what you see over the next few months?
Certainly. Well, this has been a great experience for us. In many ways, it's helped us to even further refine our processes in producing MAP. The interaction with the providers here has been fantastic to date. And they really should be commended for their level of participation. We are excited about what the final product is going to look like. This is the most accurate and most granular map we've produced in any of the states so far. Don't tell our other states that, please. But we're working to refine the mapping data in those states as well. But we have gone to great lengths to ensure that this map is highly accurate as it stands right now. And we hope that the product will be even better as we approach June 30th. So thank you for the invitation to join you this morning. We'll be glad to come back in June as the final map deadline is approaching.
Representative Junkie?
One final request from Connect Minnesota, Connect Nation folks. This process they do is a multi-step process in other states, and mapping is the first step, but then in other states they've actually come in and with permanent staff and established working relationships out around the underserved areas. Now, I think what you're finding around the underserved areas. Now, I think what you're finding is Minnesota is maybe a little different than Kentucky or Tennessee when you went in there and literally had to go county by county, city by city, organize people to bring the broadband in. And so what I ask from you for May or whenever you come back is what your suggestion would be for that next Connect Minnesota step beyond mapping, and what a state like Minnesota might do now across the state to enhance itself and even go above and beyond where we're at. So I think it's a little different scenario you're kind of alluding to than maybe what you've seen in other states, and maybe a new model for states like ours. So we're interested in your input on that.
perhaps in May or as we go on here.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman and
Mr. Light
and Representative Junkie, the model that we've developed, we believe, is adaptable to individual scenarios. And we, you know, the situation in Ohio and the Cleveland area is much different than it is in rural Appalachia and Kentucky. And it's, we're seeing, as we make adjustments in the model, it's working in both areas. We think the model is very adaptable here. I encourage each of the members of the committee to go on the Library of Congress's website, thomas.loc.gov, and search for S-1492, which was the bill that the U.S. Congress passed and was signed into law by President Bush in October of 2008, which creates a grant program. This is the Broadband Data Improvement Act. And it creates a grant program that will provide federal funds to fund initiatives like what we do. And the legislation is actually very prescriptive. It follows the Connected Nation model precisely. And we really believe now that there is an appropriation to implement that grant program in the stimulus bill, that Minnesota is going to have an opportunity to take advantage of those federal funds, up to 80% of the cost of the initiative. And so that's something that we're going to be working with the Poinsett administration on in the coming weeks. Hopefully we'll have a great idea of whether or not those funds are available by May. I think we're going to know probably by March if Minnesota is going to be able to access those funds and launch a larger scale initiative.
All right. Well, thank you for your presentation, Mr. Legg. I think it's a fine example of a public-private partnership that works, and we'll continue as this is the first step to continue broadband deployment throughout the state. So, members, with that, meeting is adjourned.